This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're seeing a bit of sunshine and brightening skies, but it's extremely cold right now. The lake, along the lake, it feels like 4 degrees, and it feels like 13 degrees. Minus 13 degrees.
Now, the Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, earlier we had enough gains for the Dow and NASDAQ to pull those averages to a win for the week. That is no longer the case. So something a little bit less than the gains we saw earlier. The Dow is still higher by 172 points, NASDAQ gaining 88 or 1.25%, and the S&P down 23, make that up 23. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index gaining almost 1%. It's not hard to find people who think housing is too expensive. What's unusual is to hear it from a home builder, but D.R. Horton says demand for its homes has moderated due to rising home prices and mortgage rates. And the 30-year fixed rate mortgage has pulled back a bit from its 5% high last year. Between that and hopes for a strong spring selling season, home builder stocks are off to their best start of any year since 2013. We have to take home builders' word for it, though, because of the government shutdown. The Commerce Department is not releasing its monthly report on new home sales. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, well, it looks as if the government shutdown may be called off. And if so, of course, we're going to be covering that live here on News Radio. It could happen anytime in the next hour or so. And a number of airline flights had to be called off today because of the shutdown. Also on the Noon Business Hour, it looks as if the Lincoln Yards project in Chicago is going to get the go-ahead.
Entrepreneur Friday, Cousins Subs headed to Chicagoland in a big way. And the U.S. could become a net energy exporter for the first time in several decades. We'll talk about all of that.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The massive Lincoln Yards development on Chicago's north side has gotten a key thumbs up. We're going to talk about that in our next segment. Right now, the partial government shutdown apparently had a major impact on air travel today and on air travel in general. We're joined by Ken Goldstein, president of KJG International Consulting in Chicago. Ken, we're hearing that the president is going to announce that everyone's going to get back to work. Do you think that's a result of the...
Well, there's pressures on it. But first, yeah. We have to give a lot of credit to the air traffic controllers and TSA people because their professionalism and working without pay and making sure that our travel is safe, we got to give them heads up. These guys have really done a great job. The thing that caused some concern this morning is there was a ground stop at LaGuardia, and that was put into effect because for flights going north from Florida and this their area, there were some shortages at the TRACON centers, that's the approach control centers, and, of course, the mid-air centers. And they didn't have enough thing. And these guys at these centers want to make sure they have enough people to make sure there's enough space in the air for the aircraft to travel safely. So, again, is this a cause for that? Probably. But, you know, there's all types of reports out there that these people are working 10-hour shifts, 6 days a week, and then they're going out to do, like, Uber jobs, which is additional stress on them. Before they even go back. And being an air traffic controller is a very stressful job because you're watching over hundreds, if not thousands of people as they move across the sky in these basically aluminum envelopes.
Ken, how long will it take to put everything back together and become more regular?
Well, yesterday there was a comment by the major airline executives, JetBlue, American, et cetera, and Southwest. First off, they're losing money because people are concerned about flying and this, that, and the other thing. And the first quarter is traditionally a slow travel season, if you will. But the fact of the matter is it could take as long as 6 to 8 weeks to get everything back into the order of sequence of things, because people have come back. They have to make sure they start going things as they've been doing. They've also got concerns with FAA inspectors to make sure they're starting to do inspections, safety inspections of the aircraft. So we've got a lot of things going on, and unfortunately, the Commerce Secretary's comments yesterday, he didn't understand why these people who are going to food banks doesn't help. So again, the first thing you want to say, you got to give a lot of credit to these people. They have done a superhuman job, and they deserve all the credit they can get.
Talk about the air traffic controller angle to this and the fact that they've been affected, because throughout this ordeal, we've heard a lot about the TSA agents, but not a lot about the controllers.
Well, the controllers, first off, they're paid more. These guys are very professional. They man the air, the control towers, the approach and egress centers. They man the centers, for example, like in Elgin, which covers all the air traffic going over the Chicago and the Midwestern area, and that's going from anywhere from, say, 15,000 feet up to 40,000 feet. And that could be aircraft just flying into our area, going to the West Coast, going to South America, going to Europe, whatever the case. These guys are extremely important. And although there have been some comments that maybe we could nationalize it, the government has maintained control of it, the FAA. And the air traffic control is a very important element. It keeps aircraft flying in their lanes, going from point to point to as they go to their destination or from their start.
Yeah, there was some talk about privatizing the air traffic controllers, and certainly when the TSA was first created, there was a discussion about that being private. Neither of those things happened. I guess, want to get into the merits of whether they should or shouldn't be private, but in a situation like this, would that change what's going on at the airports?
If it got privatized, like in Canada, it is privatized. It is not a governmental agency that watches over the air traffic. It might, but you know, I got to be careful. I don't want to shed an opinion, but I have faith. These guys really do a great job. They alter the traffic based on weather, based on air flows of aircraft over things. They'll either put them out over the ocean or back in. As an example, this morning when they had the air traffic control ground stop at LaGuardia, it was for aircraft coming in from Florida and south, primarily because of weather over Florida in Miami area, and the fact that they don't have enough time to make adjustments as they get closer to the airports in the New York area, which is our most heavily congested area. On the other hand, flights coming from the West Coast, they let them take off because they've got time to make adjustments as they come along.
Ken, thanks so much for joining us today. Ken Goldstein is president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago.
The Chicago Plan Commission has given its okay to the $6 billion Lincoln Yards development involving 55 acres along the north branch of the Chicago River. We're joined by Danny Ecker, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Danny, had you on to talk about this heading to the Plan Commission. Sure seems like this thing is moving quickly. We weren't sure we'd be talking to you again so soon.
Yeah, well, you know, this is as many people know about the Plan Commission, it's an appointed group by the mayor, so there was not an expectation there would be a lot of pushback from the commission itself, but certainly yesterday after several hours of a hearing on the plan, you know, there was quite a lot of community pushback, but ultimately it won the approval of the Plan Commission, now moves to city council committees and potentially city council for full approval in the next month or two.
Talk about some of the pushback from the community. What are some of the issues that people are having?
You know, a lot of the opposition was focused on the process. So for those who haven't necessarily followed the story, you know, Sterling Bay, the developer here, their first public release of their plan, which was really just a concept plan mostly at the time, was back in July. They had a bunch of revisions from some feedback from the community, and they presented a new version in November. And then there was far more feedback, and they made some significant changes, including the removal of a potential 20,000-seat soccer stadium. And then the latest version, the version that was approved by the Plan Commission yesterday, was just released publicly on Saturday. So the complaints from people who were upset yesterday mostly were about saying, look, we haven't had a chance to dive into details here. There have been some changes. There are a lot of things with such a grand plan that will reshape so much of the north side that we haven't even been privy to. How could you guys vote on this so soon? And that was, you know, that was a big part of the opposition. I mean, there were some other points and sticking points that people have about such a grand, large-scale development there, too, but that was really the thrust of it.
What will be the biggest transformation?
Oh, this will be almost like a second skyline in Chicago. I mean, in some ways, you were talking about a few different towers there that are 600, over 500 feet, close to 601 as tall as 650 feet tall. I mean, there was actually one commissioner yesterday who said, this is basically going to be a city within our city. And this is an area, for many who know it, between Lincoln Park and Bucktown, where five stories is pretty tall, you know, for that area. So this is going to completely transform the north side, the north branch of the Chicago River over the next decade plus. And, it's going to totally change the characteristic of that area.
Danny Ecker, always good insight. Thanks for being with us. Danny's a reporter at Crane's Chicago Business.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get a look now at the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we're headed higher across the board. The Dow up 194 points, or 0.8%. NASDAQ on the rise by 93 points, or 1.3%, and the S&P is higher by 25 points, good for a gain of almost 1%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg also higher by about 1%. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed trade all day long at the moment. Corn up 2 in May at 387.5. It's been up 2.5 to down a penny. Beans have had a 10-cent range from up 7 to down 3. At the moment, we have March up 6 at 922. And wheat's had a 6-cent range from down 5 to up 1.5. They're presently down a penny. Mixed trading here on a Friday. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. When President Trump speaks live from the White House, you will hear it live here on News Radio.
And we're watching the markets rally. That may have something to do with the possibility that things are going to get wrapped up in Washington. The markets are rallying today, and Michael Palumbo is founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, here in Chicago. Michael, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Why are the markets rallying?
Well, good afternoon, Chris and Cisco. I think part of it is this, you know, news on the possible ending of the shutdown. And part of it is that earnings have been a little bit better than people were fearing. We have a couple of exceptions today in Intel, especially not having very good earnings. But overall, the earnings growth has still continued, even though it's decelerated. We are still growing. And so the signs of the recession that people are worried about in 2019 have not shown through yet. And I've been, you know, I've said this before, I don't think that will happen. I think that it was good to come in long this year to bet on a rising stock market, and it's paid off so far.
And that's what you call a calculated risk.
You got it.
All right. Tell us how we can do that.
Okay. Well, you know, we've been a big advocate of NVIDIA and also emerging markets, and they've started the year on fire. NVIDIA is up 20%. Emerging markets are up 8% versus an S&P a rise of about 5%. So far, so good. I think those themes can continue. But as we see with Intel earnings, you know, some of the chip stocks are definitely affected by this Chinese slowdown. So you have to be selective in what you're picking, but I think there's some great stocks out there, and I think this year is going to be a really good stock picker's market.
Mike, one of the story stocks that we're paying attention to today, Starbucks, stock is up about 3% today. Pretty good sales news.
Yeah, you know what? Here's a stock that shows that China isn't all bad, right? So their comp stores, even in China, were up 1%. Their global comps were up 4%. You know, the stock earned 75 cents versus 65 predicted. So their numbers were great. So the consumer names in China, not all are doing that poorly. So it's a mixed picture. But I think what it shows is the top stocks, the best stocks like Starbucks, the leaders, they're doing okay. And the ones like Intel that maybe are falling behind technology-wise, and they're falling behind stocks like NVIDIA that I mentioned, those stocks are struggling. So you're seeing definitely differences based on the quality of the names. But Starbucks shows that Chinese consumers, at least, are still drinking a lot of coffee.
Now, Starbucks doing well with some good news. AbbVie, on the other hand, really hurting. Shares down about 6.5% today.
Yeah, that's a name that actually they missed their earnings. So, they reported 190 versus 193. It was a small miss, but it definitely was not expected. So, stock's down a little bit because of that. It's a name that has been fairly flat, and this was definitely unexpected. They were expected the whisper number was 195-ish. So, this was a pretty good miss, and so the stock's paying for it today.
You mentioned Intel. The stock was up 6% over last year, but is missing on revenue and guidance right now. What's going on there?
Well, here's a name that they actually hit their earnings number, but the guidance was terrible. And the problem is in quarter one, a lot of these tech names, they had a little bit of an increase in sales and earnings in fourth quarter because everybody was making transactions before the tariffs hit. So, you had a fourth quarter that was good, but then these first quarter numbers that they're projecting are scaring people. So Intel is a great example. They're projecting first quarter revenue at $16 billion, and the analyst estimate was $17.4 billion. So that's a pretty big miss, and that's scaring investors. The stock's down about 5%. And, this is a name that is definitely being affected by China.
Thanks so much, Michael Palumbo. Always appreciate you being on. Michael is founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
President Trump expected to speak at the White House anytime now about a temporary end to the government shutdown. When the president speaks, you will hear it here live on News Radio. It is Entrepreneur Friday. Since it is lunchtime, especially appropriate, we're welcoming our next guest, Christine Specht, president and CEO of Cousins Subs in Menomonee Falls, Wisconsin. They're about to bring a lot of locations here to Chicagoland. Christine, thanks for being with us. For people who are not familiar with Cousins Subs, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. Well, Cousin Subs is a family-owned fast casual sub shop that was started in Milwaukee by my dad and his cousin, and really based on sandwiches that they were used to enjoying when they were growing up outside of Atlantic City in New Jersey. So we've been around since 1972. And really have been driven by the quality of our product, and we're excited to be entering Chicago.
Yeah, you're planning on 40 locations. What is the hole that you see in Chicago? I mean, obviously a lot of sandwich places. What makes you think that now is the time to move in?
Well, and you're right. It's a highly competitive landscape, but we have two brothers that are franchise investors, and they said, you know what, they want to take on Chicago by opening up 40 stores in the region. So we believe that there's a lot of opportunity there, even though it is a crowded market space. But, with Wisconsin and the Midwest sensibilities that we have, we believe that will work very well in the Chicagoland area and bring to Chicago some of the things that we're really well known for, right? Like our Wisconsin cheese curds and, our Wisconsin dairy products, our, sandwiches that are hot off the grill, things like that will be a little bit unique to maybe what is currently offered.
This is also an economics story because you're going to be doing it. You're going to have to get people interested in it and let them know that you're here and what you do. Have you planned for years to do this?
We have. I think that since my time as a CEO, it's been kind of an opportunity for me to actually take a step back, look at the brand, because we are well over 40 years old. So, when you have a brand that's been around as long as it has, you're going to have some legacy issues or challenges. So for the past number of years, we've actually been really looking at those things, peeling the onion, so to speak, about what do we need to do to get this brand ready for future growth. So, introducing a remodel program, making sure the menu is the right offerings that we want to put forward, and making sure that we're partnering with the right franchise investors who are going to take the brand to the next level. So it's not just a simple saying, hey, let's have a store, in the particular location. You really have to be strategic about it because you want to do it right because you want it to last.
What would you tell an entrepreneur who would say, you know, what are the most important things I need to do to get this off the ground?
Well, you really need to have a keen understanding of how restaurants operate. And like in the case of the two brothers that are opening up the restaurants in the Chicagoland area, they're very experienced. They have other restaurant concepts. And operating a restaurant may look fairly straightforward, but it's not necessarily the case. So you need to be able to have an understanding of how restaurants work. You need to have an understanding and appreciation for the amount of resources that are necessary to be able to open up restaurants. And then, of course, you need to be able to understand how to attract the best employees that you can, because they're the ones that are going to carry out your brand and really speak volumes for who you are. So it's not a simple concept, but yet it's something that can be highly executable with the right plans in place.
Talk about some of the challenges and maybe the benefits too of working with franchisees instead of just expanding with a bunch of corporate stores.
Well, when you work with franchisees, you know, they're the true entrepreneurs. They really have an opportunity, or they see the opportunities in the markets that they're the most comfortable with. So in the case of the Chicagoland franchisees, they're used to operating in that environment. And so they can, with really great momentum, they have the intention of opening up many stores in a short amount of time. They'll do that. They'll open up the restaurants. And our obligation as a franchisor is to support them in that. So everything from site selection to then the hands-on training that happens, the operational support, the marketing support, all the things that you would expect to come from the franchisor or the parent company to help launch these brands in new markets.
Seems like it would give you an opportunity to expand more quickly, too, than if you had to handle it all as a corporation.
It certainly does, you know, I mean, because those franchisee investors are using their own resources, and they are willing to do that at a quicker pace. We're able to support that. You know, we do have corporate stores as well. However, we believe that when we're looking at outside of our home state, you know, a franchising is certainly a great way to go, particularly people who are interested in opening up multiple units. The single unit operators can have a place in almost any system, but when you really want to grow and expand, you need people who are going to be able to have the infrastructure in place to be able to replicate, you know, the number of stores that they've signed on for.
Christine, thanks for joining us today. Lots of good information there. Christine Specht is president and CEO at Cousins Subs in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
For the first time since the 1950s, the U.S. will export more energy than it imports next year. We welcome Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at the Price Group and Fox Business News contributor here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Phil. Why is this?
It's because the U.S. energy shale revolution has changed the world. You know, and, you know, it's amazing that here we are ready to declare energy independence in this country, and many people thought this was impossible just a few years ago. We have known for the last couple of years that there's been an opportunity for the U.S. to be energy independent at some point, and predictions early on was going to be that with the shale revolution by the year 2042, we would be energy independent. That could happen now as earlier as next year, which is like 23 years ahead of schedule.
Why does it happen? Why could it happen next year?
It's happening basically because the technology by the U.S. energy producers is so amazing, and that they have found more oil in a shorter period of time than anybody thought possible. The technologies that they're using to get oil out of the ground, they're finding more oil. And now reserves that many people didn't even knew exist, or if they did exist, you know, couldn't be tapped, now can be tapped, which is speeding the process along.
This seems to really impact the balance of power, because the countries that were the oil exporters, they're the ones that seem to have a lot of leverage in the world.
They really do in the past. I mean, look at where we started. I mean, if you go back to when Richard Nixon was off and the oil embargo, it put a big scare into this country, right? You know, it was our wake-up call that we're wasting too much energy and we're going to be beholden to other countries. And back then, Richard Nixon declared that they wanted to work towards energy independence. Here it is, 2000. 2019, and by 2020, we're there. So this is the equivalent of landing on the moon. It really is. But if you look at what its impact on the economy, it really does make the U.S. a much more of a economic powerhouse. It gives us a lot more sway in the world, and, you know, it may change the way we view foreign policies, because in the past, you know, we spent a lot of money protecting countries, not because we liked them so much. We protected them because our economic interests were there because they produced oil.
Phil Flynn, always good analysis. Phil is senior market analyst at the Price Group.
WBBM News Time is 12:55, a business news sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. And here is Elisa Parenti.
Chris, the Dow is higher by 203 points, or almost 1%. NASDAQ advancing 96 points, good for a gain of 1.3%. And the S&P gaining 25 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up almost 1%. Crude futures also on the rise at $53.79 a barrel. We have been waiting for the last 26 minutes. President Trump and congressional leaders are reportedly closing in on a deal that will temporarily reopen the government after a 35-day partial shutdown. Now, the agreement calls for funding the government through February 15th and includes no money for a border wall, according to reports in the Washington Post. So we're anxious to see what exactly will be announced here when the president comes to address reporters in the Rose Garden and how that will impact shares. We'll keep you posted. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.